Well, hello, friends. Mark DiMatteo coming at you with another new message going out to our Great Questions group. I have message actually number 38 coming at you today. The title is Considering Space Part 3. Subtitle could be Contemplating Confinement. Or we could also say Considering the Condition of Being Outer Space Bound. Okay, considering the condition of being outer space bound. And today is the 22nd of October, 2014. And I trust this is finding all of you all doing well. And as we get started, let me say just a quick welcome to those of you that have joined us since our last message. This may be your first official broadcast that you're receiving. And I want to say welcome to y'all. And also to remind you, especially if you are new, that these audios are a chronology and that my previous audios are posted on my website, which is markdematteo.com or markdematteo.com, which is the American way of saying it. But anyway, that's markdematteo.com, and they're all on there. And so you can check them out and catch up and kind of see how we've arrived at the point where we're at right now. Well, all right then, here we go. Looking forward to sharing this with you as always, so I trust you will you'll benefit from it and you'll enjoy it as much as I have putting it together for you. So, folks, as I have already referred to in several of my previous audios, there were two broad themes that played an important role in keeping me motivated as I pursued this Great Questions quest of mine. The first was this growing awareness I had of a pervasive underlying inadequacy to this life. I had always sensed it, even before I began my quest. And in those earlier messages I've referred to, I have pointed out some of these more obvious deficiencies which I was aware of even at the outset. However, as I began actually studying the reality surrounding me, my awareness of these inadequacies began to multiply and intensify, as did my overall sense of dissatisfaction with being confined only to this current existence. For the first time, gang, I was really beginning to learn just how limited this life is. And in actuality, it is quite limited, as we shall continue to see. And then there is the second theme, which only served to further compound the situation. And that is this: I could imagine so much more. We have also discussed this previously. We have been given the ability to envision a far greater potential existence. And I gradually began to do just that. The more I learned about the true nature of the operation of this current cosmos, the more I began to see the actual potential of an enhanced existence beyond the limitations I was presently subject to and dealing with. Not surprisingly, this slowly began to develop in me a growing desire for such a reality. And as the facts I continued to accumulate increasingly pointed to not only the definite possibility of such a condition, but even its probability, I began to notice that my desire gradually progressed into eventually what became an actual earnest longing. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm certainly not complaining, and I don't want to give the impression, folks, that I'm necessarily down on our present existence, for I'm really not. In fact, as far as this normal life is concerned, I've had a pretty good one. I have been fortunate enough to have had the opportunity to do some relatively cool and significant things thus far in my life, and I've touched on a few of them already in some of these messages. Still, one of the success life skills I had learned and then taught in my business career was the power of having a vision. What I mean by vision here is the process of developing a mental picture of a better reality we could, and perhaps eventually would, like to actually live at some point in the future. Having something to aim at and work for, ideally in every important area of our life, helps prevent us from stagnating and motivates us to keep growing and progressing towards some enhanced condition of life. Furthermore, a vision is not usually something that is static or always stays the same. Rather, it will normally be dynamic, a changing, growing picture that develops as we do. As we hopefully advance in knowledge, experience, and wisdom throughout the course of our lives, the quality, sophistication, and refinement of our vision should as well. In other words, our vision should mature as we do. Ideally, it will become more accurate, more enlightened, and more lofty the further we progress in life. And so, ladies and gents, this is essentially the reason behind this, quote, yearning dynamic I find myself living in today. It has simply been a logical progression of this same skill set I've been trying to apply for most of my adult life. My quest for answers to the great questions has progressively opened up knowledge to me that has radically altered my understanding of what I now know is possible. As my knowledge and awareness has grown, consequently, so has my vision. And since I now know there was an entirely new dimension of, quote, better available, how could I not then begin to desire it and begin to pursue it? It has been said that our mind is sort of like a rubber band. Once it is stretched, it never goes back to the same size it was before. And the bottom line is, I now knew more, and therefore I began to want more. And not just for me only, but also for anyone else that really desired it too. And that is why I am making the effort to share this new picture with each of you, so that you too will know what is truly available to every one of us. Actually, it is interesting to note that, prior to my actually launching this group, as I would have opportunities to share some of this info through my business and life coaching activities, it was always this topic which drew the greatest interest. While the overall subject of the great questions always seemed to intrigue and fascinate the majority of the audiences I have had the opportunity to share with, opening people's eyes to the limitations that we are now actually living under, and moreover, to the real possibility of a dramatically enhanced existence far beyond anything we are capable of experiencing now, has always created the highest levels of interest. Furthermore, it remains, still to this day, by far the number one topic I am asked to talk about. So therefore, let us now take a few moments and consider this second of the three grand cosmic components, space, and do so in light of the aspect of confinement. We are specifically going to quickly focus in on the limitations of existing in space on just three simple and practical levels: outer space, normal space, and inner space. But as we do, perhaps you will begin to realize in a whole new way, as I did, just how space-bound we really are. So to begin with, let us consider outer space. Folks, as we have already discussed in a previous message, the space in which this universe exists is enormous, almost beyond belief. Furthermore, it is filled with a virtually countless array of stars, galaxies, and other celestial phenomena. Yet we human beings, even in our modern technological age, are still, as we have been for all our known history, essentially confined to an existence limited only to this planet. It's true, man has been to the moon, but it is interesting to reflect on the fact that that was now over 40 years ago. The last moon mission, Apollo 17, was in December of 1972. Folks, I was 12 in 1972. The moon was supposed to be our first real step into space, which was unfolding before us as a vast new frontier. We talked a bit about this back in message number 14, Lessons from Star Trek Part 1. It's why I wanted to be an astronaut. We were going to be making rapid advances into space. We were supposed to be making regular trips to the moon and have permanent moon bases by the early 80s. It was predicted that we'd be traveling to Mars shortly thereafter, where we would eventually have our first planetary space base. By the early 90s, we were supposed to be traveling to the outer planets and even have permanent bases set up on the moons of both Jupiter and Saturn. Then, by the early in the new millennium, it was predicted that we would actually be venturing out beyond the limits of our solar system and perhaps even traveling to our nearest star. Furthermore, as we move deeper into the 21st century, it was predicted that mankind would eventually expand out and begin to literally colonize our galaxy. Many felt like this was one of the great hopes for the people on Earth, as it would potentially open up brand new worlds with fresh supplies of natural resources and more room to live. And yet, folks, the reality is, after almost 42 years, none of this has happened. Yes, we certainly have sent out an extensive number of a variety of different probes to a variety of different places, right, to do a variety of different things. But as far as manned spaceflight is concerned, not only have we not made it to another planet, let alone another star, we've yet even to get back to the moon again. This is amazing, especially in light of the other technological advancements we have made in the last four decades. Today, you and I carry around far more computing power in our phones than the combined capacity of both the command and the lunar modules of the Apollo 17 spacecraft. So why then have the only manned space flights since been in the form of low Earth orbit missions? Well, gang, primarily because of a variety of limiting factors that presently preclude us from wandering anywhere beyond our own celestial backyard. For instance, the sheer distances involved. Though we've discussed this, I actually have one more cool analogy I want to share with you to help you visualize this. I was actually doing a little research to re-verify some of this information and happened to read this on the NASA Glenn Research Center site, and I'm going to quote it because it's pretty cool. Here we go. Interstellar distances are so astronomical, pun intended, that it is difficult to convey this expanse. Consider the following analogy. If the sun were the size of a typical 1/2-inch diameter marble, the distance from the sun to the Earth, which is called an astronomical unit or AU, would be about 4 feet. The Earth would be barely thicker than a sheet of paper, and the orbit of the moon would be about 1/4 inch in diameter. On this scale, the closest neighboring star is about 210 miles away. To help put this in perspective, consider that it takes light over 8 minutes to cover that 4-foot astronomical unit mentioned before. Light is the fastest thing we know to exist. Just imagine how long will it take you to travel 210 miles if it takes you over 8 minutes to travel just 4 feet? Actually, the answer is 4.2 years. Our nearest neighboring star, Proxima Centauri, is 4.2 light years away. End of quote. Folks, on this scale, the distance the Apollo astronauts would have traveled to get to the moon would be approximately 1/8 of an inch. Folks, Mars on this scale would be over 2 feet away, just Mars. And Jupiter, the next planet out, would be 21.5 feet away. Can you imagine then having to travel over 200 miles just to reach the nearest star? Therefore, because of these extreme distances, we are faced with significant limitations regarding things like power and propulsion, speed, fuel, and also economics, folks. Furthermore, life support demands, the high maintenance requirements of our physical bodies, the extensive amount of supplies required, the fact that space is an exceedingly hostile environment, at least to us, impact the impact of the second law, the law of decay, which is interesting to consider. Absolutely zero possibility, once underway in deep space, the void of space, of repair, resupply, or rescue. Our brief lifespan, we don't last long enough. Our mortality, okay, we don't last long enough and then we die, okay? And our mental, emotional, and physical limitations. And these are just some of the constraints, folks, because there are more. And gang, most of these obstacles today are just as daunting to the potential of deep space as they were back in the 70s. Actually, they're all fascinating to consider, and it would be, they're fun to consider if you're into this sort of stuff, and it would be fun to do so at some point in time, perhaps, but delving into them right now would be beyond the scope of this message. Perhaps we might return and do another full-length message on space travel at some point in the future, but for right now, we need to forge ahead. There is far more important ground to cover which lies in front of us, and we have to get to it first. For right now, though, let me just say that. In light of the magnitude of just these limitations briefly mentioned here, it seemed quite apparent to me and many other scientists as well, folks, that any real possibility of exploring even a fraction of the vast amount of space which lies around us is very minute indeed. Therefore, we have to consign ourselves to the fact that for all practical purposes, the cosmos, on the whole, will in all likelihood be forever beyond our reach. That is, at least in the context of this current existence. As such, we begin to grasp the magnitude, at least on this grand cosmic scale, of just how space-bound we truly are. And yet, folks, the real question is, why is this the case? Why should there be this strange and seemingly inconsistent limitation? For here again, we are comparing the magnitude of the size of space containing the universe and the magnitude of complexity found in us as human beings. And the reality is, there is no comparison. For as the laws of our X-frame have proven, complexity is of far, far greater import than that of mere size alone. Therefore, the significance of the extreme level of complexity found in man far outdistances that of the construct of space, even on the vast scale evident in the heavens. While we touched on this fact in our previous message on the paradox of power, we will see just how great a contrast this is when we begin exploring various aspects of the human body and the messages ahead. So why then should the objects in which is accumulated the most highly organized matter known in the universe be confined to existing in such a small part of it? Folks, this too doesn't seem to make any sense. In fact, it is another surprising and yet interesting paradox. In some ways, it parallels the stunning poverty of power we exist in, okay, which we've also talked about. For as we are surrounded by virtually limitless power, and yet have access to only a minute portion of it, we are also surrounded by virtually limitless space, and yet we are confined to live in only a tiny piece of it. This is very strange indeed. Now, while this might be somewhat frustrating for those of us, like myself, who may have had some level of interest in space exploration, most of us are probably not too concerned about not being able to explore the stars. For other than maybe the lost hope of some type of possible escape to a far distant planet, most of us are probably far more concerned with just the minor amount of space surrounding us here on this planet. But once again, it is interesting to pause and reflect that even in the more mundane and familiar environment surrounding us in our everyday existence here on Earth, we are still quite confined by space. Honestly, I had never really realized just how much so, but in our next message, we are going to take a few moments to consider the constraints of living in space, even in our day-to-day lives. And as we do, I think perhaps you may more fully realize, as I did, just how normal space-bound we really are too. So until then, gang, this is Marcus D. signing off and wishing all of you another wonder-filled day. Take care, folks. Bye-bye.